Hey, Aaron Chambers here. Welcome to episode 29 of Enjoy the Journey with Aaron Chambers. I've been resting a little bit. Life is crazy busy and things are picking up. I'm leading the church here in Greeley, Colorado. I'm also involved with coaching cross country at a local high school, and we're in the middle of cross country season. And I will rest when I need to rest. And part of that rest looks like not putting out these podcasts every week for a few weeks. So thank you for your patience. If you subscribe to this podcast, I'm grateful. If you're stumbling upon this podcast and you want to subscribe, I'd be so grateful. Also, if you give it a good review, that'd be awesome. 5 stars would be amazing. A thumbs up, it would be wonderful. And just let people know about it. Hopefully it's helpful. I have interesting conversations with interesting people. That's the goal, at least. I'm a pastor here in Greeley, Colorado. I'm also the author of 7 books, and I co-lead a network called the Connect Leadership Network, involved in a lot of different things. So I'm grateful for you and for your time. And hopefully this podcast today is especially impactful and a blessing to you. The podcast today is sponsored by Kentucky Christian University. Kentucky Christian University is a wonderful Christian university in Grayson, Kentucky. And you can find out more about Kentucky Christian University at kcu.edu. I just finished a series of teachings, TED Talk-like teachings on evangelism in light of COVID. And in those teachings, there are 4 videos, about 12 to 15 minutes each. And in those videos, I address some of the concerns pastors are having right now. I look towards the future, I look towards evangelism and how we can evangelize and reach people in this COVID world. And those teachings will be available as of October 15th at kcu.edu. You want to look for the Preaching Roundtable 2020 edition. And hopefully those are a blessing to you. But I'm really grateful for KCU sponsoring this episode of Enjoy the Journey. We're talking to Angel Flores in this conversation. Angel Flores is a pastor here in Greeley, Colorado. He's a dear friend of mine. He's the co-founder of the Connect Leadership Network. He's been in ministry 25 years with his wife. He planted a church that's about 13 years old here in Greeley, Colorado, called Mosaic. Mosaic is a thriving congregation, a diverse congregation. And they're doing a great work in our community. And I'm so excited for you to get to know Angel Flores a little bit. In this conversation, we talk about everything from marriage to leadership to parenting to white privilege to racism to how we can better partner with each other. And also Angel looks forward a little bit and talks a little bit about what he thinks the future looks like for the church in this COVID world. So once again, I'm glad you're here. Hopefully you like it. If you do like this podcast, would you please give it a thumbs up? And would you please subscribe? That'd be awesome. Let your friends know about it because I want to put out good content that blesses you. And like I said, interesting conversations with interesting people that hopefully will add value to your life, leadership, and ministry. All right, so enjoy this conversation with Pastor Angel Flores. Hey, Aaron Chambers here. Welcome to Enjoy the Journey with Aaron Chambers. I'm excited for you to hear this conversation today. I'm talking to my friend Angel Flores, pastor. Angel is one of the best leaders I personally know, and he is killing it. He's doing a great work here in Greeley, Colorado at a church called Mosaic. We'll talk a little bit about that. Angel, thank you for joining us, man.
Hey, good to be here. Excited to be here. Excited about what you're doing to be a part of it. Yeah.
Well, Angel, for me, it's cool to be able to share you with the world. I mean, I know you've written a book or two. I know for sure one. And you are you speak all over the place. And so I know there are people who know who you are, but I'm excited for people that have not heard of you to get to know you a little bit. Tell me a little bit about like your pastor. How long have you been a pastor, man?
We just celebrated 25 years of ministry. That's so awesome. The church during COVID did a little, it was pretty cool. They did they made a video talking to some of the people who have been a part of our journey. And so it was a cool day. Yeah. 25 years. 25 years ago, my first ministry was called Royal Rangers, which is like Boy Scouts in the Assembly of God. And so that was it. It's been a long journey, man.
Wait. So what is Royal Rangers? What's the connection with your anniversary celebration?
So that was our first. So Diane and I were, we're 23.
Okay.
And we got invited to a church to see a traveling drama team mm-hmm. called Master's Commission. And they did this skit about blind Bartimaeus. And I was, at that time, I was 23 years old, had worked my way up in a company that built store fixtures for jewelry stores. And so I was making more money than I'd ever seen in my life. I was traveling all over the country. I was, and so we had a brand new house. I had a brand new house built when I was 21, which is crazy. We had a nice car, furniture, all the stuff, right? I had two kids, and I was completely miserable inside. I just felt, I felt like, so this is it, huh? Like I've got to the top of the mountain. This is it. I'm supposed to be happy, right? But I wasn't happy. And I thought, so then the rest of my life is going to be just getting my pile of stuff and making it bigger and bigger and bigger. Like that's it. So we go to this church and see this Bartimaeus skit, and he's up on the stage, and he kept saying, "I want to see, I want to see." He was blind, right? He's asking Jesus to heal him. And I was standing in the back of the church holding my son, who was like, he was maybe 3 months old. Now he leads worship in our church. And I was bawling, and I said, "That is me. I'm blind." And it just wrecked me. And so Diane and I both, in that church tradition, they come to the front, and to commit your life to Christ, you walk to the front and pray the prayer. And so we did that. And 2 weeks later, I enrolled in Bible college. I just knew, like, this is it. So my first ministry was, I was a Royal Rangers commander, which is like, it's like Boy Scouts or Cub Scouts. Huh? So I had these four little boys that were in my group. They're like 7 years old. Uh-huh. And I started teaching them the Bible, and I didn't know the Bible. So I was just like, so it made me read and learn. And then I would go and try and keep them engaged. And that wasn't easy, but, so 25 years ago that all happened. And now we pastor a church that we planted, 13 years ago. And, it's been a journey, man.
So back to that room with those boys. Do you have any connection with any of those? Have you kept in contact with any of those boys that were in that first group?
Yeah. So one of them, a couple of years ago, started coming into my church, hadn't seen him in years. And, he was a part of our church, but he just moved. So he left the area, but it was something to see him, and yeah, still connected to his family. And mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's one of the things I really appreciate about the congregation there, Mosaic, is they love really well. They love really well. What is something that they did right on your 25th anniversary celebration of ministry?
One of the coolest moments. So they did a video, and I know my daughter helped put it together. She was really instrumental in that. She knows our story the best. And it was like pictures from when, she's was probably 19. It was like 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. I was in New York City, and we were preaching on the subways. I went out with some guys that were there that there were subway preachers. And so we did that. And so there were pictures from those moments, and there were videos of people who had, who we had some, we played some small part in their ministry, or in their formation of their ministry, or in their early walk with Christ. Now they're pastors, or you know what I mean? And so that was, so we had several people get on the video and share that we had played a part in there. And that was so encouraging, because it's like, the day-to-day grind of pastoring can sometimes be a lot. And I tend to forget big picture stuff that God is doing or has done. And so it was an awesome reminder of what's happened in the last 25. And I feel now like, so I'm 48 now, and I feel like I still have a lot of strength to do everything I want to do. Like, I still feel very capable, and, I work out and whatever. And so but I also feel like I've gathered some wisdom. And so I don't do all the stupid things I used to do. And so it feels like a nice sweet spot to be at in life, where I feel like I'm just coming into my prime in terms of, that last 25 was awesome, but man, this next run is, I think, going to be the best. That's how I'm looking at it.
So if you could go back and talk to that guy 25 years ago and say, dude, sit down. Like, here's one thing you need to know because you're going to get it wrong. There's one thing that you need to know because you're going to get this righter than you could ever imagine. What's the one thing that you got wrong and one thing you got right?
I would tell him to cut the mullet because I had a nice mullet back then.
Yes.
As you can see, that abandoned me. I would tell that guy the one thing he's doing right and the one thing he's doing wrong, it's the same thing. I lived with a level of intensity and urgency mm-hmm. about the gospel that I've always been a really driven guy. And so I lived with that. And so that caused me to get a lot done. And we did a lot of stuff and, you know, whatever, right? Like Paul says, I count all my successes, but I count my gains as losses, right? Mm-hmm. So I look at those things. I say, man, we did a lot of really cool stuff. But I paid a tremendous personal price for that, for that work ethic that was unhealthy. So I would tell that guy, take your days off, spend time with your family. And only by the grace of God, I didn't lose my family. All my kids are here in my church. They're all serving in my church. They all love God. They all love my wife and I. They love Jesus. That's what else could I want? You know what I mean? They love the church. And so somehow we got that right. But I would tell that guy, hey, you can walk sometimes. It's okay. You don't have to always run. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, that kind of made me who I am, you know? So I did in 2000, in the year 2000. So right at, 20 years ago, I had a physical breakdown because I remember I had gone 47 days without a day off. It was something I would brag about, like, man, you know, look, cause I'm so committed, right, to the gospel and look what's happening. And I was in ministry I was running this ministry team, a bunch of college students, and we were doing, it was 7 days a week. We're doing stuff and all, you know, people were coming to Christ and all lots of good stuff. But again, that price that I was paying for. And I remember I was sitting in the mall parking lot here in Greeley, and that song, I Can Only Imagine, came on. It had just come out. And to me, that song was about creativity and imagination. And I had none of it. Like, I was wiped. And I just started crying. I was bawling. I was weeping. And Diane said, what's wrong? And I couldn't even articulate. Like, she says, what's the matter? Why are you crying? I said, I can't even. The only thing I could explain is, you know, being a pastor, right? We're supposed to be good with words and metaphors and all that. I said, I feel like a bucket of peanut butter, like a 5 gallon bucket of peanut butter that's completely empty. And there's just some dried kind of peanut butter on the sides and a little on the bottom. And somebody's scraping that out. I said, that's how I feel. And I didn't realize I was having a physical breakdown. And so, yeah, to that guy, I would say, hey, man, it's okay. Jesus, he's enough. He's going to take care of it. You just do your part and trust him to do the rest. So, yeah. And I still wrestle with that, probably like a lot of driven type A guys, you know, but I'm better at it. Much, much, much better at it, especially taking my day off. Much, much, much better. So
you mentioned Diane. Talk a little bit about your wife and her role in your ministry. What are you doing? You stretch it? What are you doing there?
Oh, my shoulder's all messed up. Yeah, dude, it just hurts.
Hey, by the way, tell us, like, what belt are you? You do jiu-jitsu.
I do Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Yeah, I've been doing it.
By the way, God, I want people to know, like, this is legit. Like, you don't just, like this is something you're committed to. You share the gospel there. You're, like, the farm is, like, someplace, like, you have deep friendships there. But you seriously do, like, some hardcore rolling, yeah, fighting, whatever you call it.
Rolling, yeah. So 4 years ago. It's almost 4 years in January. It was a bucket list thing. We did that one word that can change your life. You know, a lot of churches do that at the first of every year. You pick a word, and my word was press. And I was like, I want to press into Christ. And then I also thought, if I'm going to do something physical with my body, I'd done a few triathlons and stuff like that. If I'm going to do something physical, I mean, I'm not getting any younger. So if I'm going to do it, let's do it now. So I was like, I'm going to enter a jiu-jitsu tournament, but I never wrestled. I've never trained. I just wanted to do it. I'm just like that, I guess. There's something wrong with me. And so, yeah, I started training. For 4 months, I trained. And jiu-jitsu is like, Brazilian jiu-jitsu is like, imagine the UFC with no punching or kicking. So it's all submissions, it's grappling, it's takedowns, it's arm bars and chokes. But you wear a gi. And so, yeah, for 4 months, I trained, and then I entered a tournament. I would not recommend that, but I did it. And I didn't win, but I got hooked, and it's become, it would be a misstatement to say it's a mission field for me, because mm-hmm. It's become more than that. These guys, they're like my friends. They're like family. Yep. And we have, I have sat down with several of those guys. There's a rule at the farm that, at this gym I go to, you can't talk about politics, sports, or religion, because those are things that get people seriously upset. And then you're about to put your hands on each other and try and submit mm-hmm. each other. So, you don't want to get guys doing that out of anger, right?
Yep.
So I've always respected that. But now it never fails. Someone will say, hey, so you're a pastor. They call me the pastor of disaster. And so you're the pastor? Yeah, I'm a pastor. Oh, cool. What church? And then Several guys have, and their families have visited Mosaic. I've met with several guys outside of the gym, counseled several guys. So it's been a great opportunity for me to share the gospel and share my faith. But it's also, I don't understate this when I say, I think God sent me jiu-jitsu because it's so therapeutic for me just to go somewhere where I'm not. They know I'm a pastor, but I'm not expected to be the pastor there. I can just roll, and yeah, it's a great, very strenuous workout.
Yeah, that's why I go to the gym.
I'll get you out there at some point.
Yeah, dude, I like physical activity that doesn't involve me being submitted, potentially having arms broken,
or what if you're the one submitting
this in an interview because my arm is out of socket.
Your shoulder's all jacked up right now. Yeah.
No, it's I love the way you and Diane love people. I mean, that's the thing is
oh yeah. You asked me about Diane. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get to Diane in a second, but just cause I want people to get I think this is so interesting about you is that, one of the things I love about your church, it's full of like, I mean, this is the highest compliment, like dudes, like guys, like men, like, and I think one of the reasons is because you just love people and you are yourself and, motorcycle riding, jiu-jitsu. I mean, you're not playing a game. This is who you are. And it's you're really comfortable in your own skin, and it just attracts guys that like, I mean, if it goes down, the men of Mosaic are going to stand up for righteousness and for, it's a really cool culture that God has built around your giftedness.
Yeah. Yeah. I always joke that my church could beat up someone else's church. I joke like that.
Yeah.
But we have attracted guys. We have a guy on our worship team. He's incredible on the team. He's an incredible singer, but he's also a cage fighter, So we have several guys that are kind of like that and like are in that world. And I just think that's just because that's what I like, mm-hmm. So if a pastor's watching and he's like, man, that's the last thing I'd ever want to do is do something like that. That's fine. Like if you're into fishing, then you're going to start attract who you are. And sometimes we fight against that for the sake of diversity, right? We want the church to be diverse and we don't want it just a bunch of clones of us. And I understand that, but the value of one soul in heaven is still one soul. So if you attract a guy because you like fishing or hunting or because you like whatever, NASCAR or football mm-hmm. or whatever, that guy still, and that guy makes it to heaven because of some of the interactions you guys had where he made you made him feel comfortable. I go try to get as many of those guys as you can. Like that's what I'm doing. And so I wouldn't, and it's funny because Mosaic is very diverse mm-hmm. and we didn't set out to do that. Even with the name Mosaic, we never set out for that. It's just kind of happened because of exactly what you're saying. We're just trying to be us. And I talk about things that I like and I'm into, and jokes that I make are things that I think are funny. And it seems to attract a certain kind of broad crowd.
So yeah, talk about Diane and your wife and her role in your ministry, because you guys are partners in ministry, obviously, but, and I'm interested in also her role in the birth of Mosaic.
Yeah. So, you know, there's every pastor I've met, their wife plays a little different role. And that's it's so diverse in that way, ministry. So Diana and I are really partners in the church. Like she's the church administrator. So she's here right now working. And it's always been like that. It's never been like Angel's ministry and then Diane and the kids are there since the kids were little. We'd take them with us everywhere. You know, if we were going to do an outreach, the kids were there. If we were going to, you know, if we're traveling, we're driving across the country with our ministry team, they just jumped in the van and we all went together. And so it's always been that kind of family affair for us. And so Diane, yeah, she's more than half. A lot of times I think she's the reason people put up with me is because they love her. And yeah, she really is the mother of this place. You know what I mean? She's that mother, loving mother figure. She's doing a ladies retreat. So they normally do a fall retreat overnight. It's up in the mountains, but because of COVID, they can't do any of that. So she's doing it here and it's just going to be a, you know, Saturday morning from like 9 to 3 or something like that. And she's had the highest attendance registration ever. Because I think it's just because of her. People want to be around her and they love her. And she hates speaking. She would hate to do what I'm doing right now. It's just not her. But she is absolutely the backbone of this. If she ever didn't want to do this, then I wouldn't do it either. I'd be done. I'd do something else because this is that much of a team sport for us. So yeah, she knows that if she ever came in and said, you know, I'm done, she knows I resign that day. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to give our wives that power, because I don't ever want Diane to feel like she's competing with the church and my kids, for the example. Now, granted, they're all grown now, but I don't want her to ever feel like I'm picking the church over her. So if she knows that she has that ultimate trump card. Now, she also knows the power of that she's holding, right? So if she ever does throw it down, she knows I'd be done. And that's a incredible weight for her too. So, but I think it's important to give them that, our spouses, that comfort, that reassurance that the church is not number one. It's far down the list. Jesus is number one. She's number two. Then the kids, then Mosaic can come in.
I wish people could understand how amazingly wonderful your kids are. Your kids are just, each one of them is uniquely astounding and smart and sane and fun and caring, compassionate. Like, so, I mean, no one's perfect as parents. What did you and your wife do right?
I've thought about that a lot, man. We've had that question a lot. So our kids, we have three kids. Marissa's our oldest. She's 28. I always mess that up. She's married. Her husband was a school counselor and then COVID happened. And so he's looking for something else right now. They have two kids. So anybody who's thinking, I can't handle my kids, just hang on because better kids are coming, right? Like you're going to be happy you didn't get rid of your kids because grandkids are awesome. You know that. And so, that's Marissa. And then she was a counselor in the schools and then she started her family. And so she stays home. Caleb is our oldest son. He's 26, 25, 26. He's married, leads worship here, and he teaches English at the high school here in town. And then his wife is our building and events coordinator. And then our son Josiah is 23. He's about to turn 23. And he's getting married in December. And when he was 10 years old, Mosaic started and he helped out in the kids church. He started doing tech in the kids church because there was nobody else that could do it. And he was 10 and he was going to be in there anyway. And his sister was the children's pastor. So it's what they did. They were a team. And he still does tech in the kids church, even though he's, you know, now he's graduated from college, about to get married. Him and his wife both serve in kids church. So yeah, he works as a counselor in the schools. Also, he works for Dream Team. So yeah, we're very, very proud of our kids. And I heard somebody say the other day, I don't want my kids to be like me. I want them to be better than me. And I somehow, Diana and I succeeded in that. Our kids are all better than us. And yeah, if we did one thing right, I think the church had its proper place, even though there were times when I, you know, that 47-day thing. But even when we did that, even when I was doing all that stupid stuff, my kids were right there with me, integrated in it, mixed in it. So it wasn't ever dad's at work and the kids are home and we never see them. It was, man, we never do anything else but church stuff, but at least we're together. And so I think that was it. I think the kids saw that we were real, mm-hmm. saw that there were times when we struggled and suffered, and they were right there in the middle of it and saw that, and God really has been faithful to us. So yeah, that's a hard one though. I really wrestle with that question because I don't really know exactly what we did. Sometimes I think we just had three amazing kids and they would have thrived in any house. I don't know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a hard one.
So you're one of the things that I think about you, Angel, is you guys do family really well. Your extended families, the ones I've met, are just great people. And your father and mother, I just know as Pastor Flores, great servants there. And talk a little bit about their role in the ministry there at Mosaic, because that's a very unique, it's a unique relationship you have with your dad, who is a great man of God. And he and your mom are just, like, it's amazing. Like the life they have, vitality. Thank you. Vitality they have. Thank you, man. And their vision, and that they both pastor very, very, very well. Anyway, just talk a little bit about their, because family is so important to you and their role in your ministry.
So we started Mosaic, and my dad started a Spanish church called Amanecer Cristiano, which means, like, it was the name came from, he has a radio program. He's had it for 30 years, and he has it on a secular station, the most popular secular station here in Northern Colorado, Spanish. And so the idea is, when people wake up after having been out in the bar, or, you know, maybe hungover, that's who really who he's trying to find, is those guys, that they turn on the radio and there he is talking about Christ, and, you know, in a non-judgmental way, like, hey, you should, you know. So his radio program was called Amanecer Cristiano, which is like Wake Up Christian or Good Morning Christian or something like that. So when he started his service 13 years ago, we started just a couple months later. And so we just said, well, let's just work together. So that's what we did. So he's the pastor of the Spanish service, and he leads worship. He's an incredible musician. And so he leads worship, and he's their pastor. I do the preaching in the Spanish, and then my son leads worship in the English, and I also do the preaching in English. So we just went to three services. So now I'm preaching three times on Sunday morning, once in the Spanish and then twice in the English. So yeah, my dad and I are partners in every sense of the word. He's 74, but a young 74, still feels good, still feels strong, still having fun, still enjoying this. I ask him from time to time, are you having fun? Is this still what you want to be doing? You know, and his answer is always, yeah, you know. But, and he's been good at deciding what he feels like working on, and what, if he doesn't want to do something, then I'll do it and it's fine. So yeah, we have kind of not every family could do that, right? Like it's a unique arrangement we have, but somehow it works.
So can you talk a little bit about that because we have obviously a lot of pastors who are watching this, who lead teams, and you lead a really good team. There's more people on your team, and you can talk about that as much as you want to. But okay, so talk to me about leading a team while also leading a team that has some family members on it. Like, what are some basic, just little bits of wisdom you have about leading a team really well? Because you lead a team, your team, your team is healthy, and you lead really well. But it's also like, I'm thinking about some of the men and women who are watching this thinking, I could never work with relative's name. You guys do it with such in-laws,
or whatever.
Yeah. So talk a bit, a little bit about leading a team well in light of the unique challenges of your situation.
So just to give some context to the people who are listening, we started Mosaic 13 years ago. There were eight of us in my kitchen. And then we had our launch strategy was we had a MySpace, church MySpace, and yes. We took out an ad in the paper, and that was our launch strategy. We had no idea what we were doing. We didn't have any money. We actually just passed the offering plate at our first service, and that was our launch budget, right? And so we put everything on our credit card and went for it. So that was 13 years ago. Right before COVID, we were floating just under 700 a week. 680, 685. So the things I'm going to share are from that stage and where we're at right now. Mm-hmm. But we've been every stage. So pastors, if you're like, well, we have 100, I can't get 100 people to show up on Sunday. I've been there too. I've been there where it's like, oh, it's a nice day out, so we're going to have 80 people today because the Broncos are playing, or, you know, whatever, or it's raining, or it's cold, or it's sunny, or it's, right. I've been there. But right now there's 10 of us on our staff. If you count the Spanish, it's about 13. And one of them is my son, one's my dad. And so we try to be very conscious of not letting church stuff go home. So like if I'm hanging out with my son, we're sitting around we like to do fire pits in my backyard. If we're sitting around the fire pit in the backyard, we're not going to talk about church or Mosaic or worship or any of that. Right there, it's my son, I'm his dad, and we're talking about life and what he's got going on. But when we're here and we're doing, we're doing our job, the hat changes a little bit, but I don't know. I think if you provide a clear enough picture of what we're doing and what we're headed for and what we're trying to do, if that picture is clear enough, then and you got the right people on the team. That's the other thing. I mean, you can't have people with their own agendas. And I've been very thankful to have that, where we have the right people in the right seats. We haven't had a new staff member added to our team in 6 years, maybe. So we've had the same group for that long. And so everybody gets it. I've taken, we model after other churches, just like a lot of people do, right? I've taken every one of my staff at some point, they've either gone or I've taken them somewhere and I've said, this is what we're building. Look around. So now we all have the same picture in our head of where we're going. That helps define what we're going to do. And also, as important, here's what we're not going to do. We're not that church that does fill in the blank, right? We only do four things. That's it. And that's all we're doing. Everything else, that's just not for us. God bless you if that's what you want to do in your church. You guys want to whatever, that's cool. We're not doing that. We're doing this and that's it. And so, yeah, to me that helps define. Yeah.
It helps define what?
It helps define where we are, where we're going to be and where we're not going to be. And so, yeah, we've had, just because an opportunity comes up for the church doesn't mean it's the right opportunity. And so if that's going to distract from our main purpose, our main vision, then I don't want to have anything to do with it. But sometimes, especially for a smaller church, if you get an opportunity, maybe you need to take it. It'll give you better visibility in the community. Maybe it'll give you an opportunity to reach more people. But at some point, there's a point of diminishing returns. And it's like, yeah, I don't need to be in every meeting in the community for faith leaders because it's just not the best use of my time. You get what I'm saying? Like at some point you have to kind of define your lane and then stay in it.
So Mosaic has overcome, every church has a story. Mosaic has had overcome some very unique challenges. So for the men and women out there who are at churches saying, well, good for him. Glad his church could grow. My church will never grow. He had it easy.
You're right.
Blah, blah, blah.
I would say that would be my first answer. You're right. You're right.
He's friends with Aaron, so his life is easy. And, you know, talk a little bit about like some of the unique challenges that God has led Mosaic through and how that, and what that has done to the DNA of Mosaic as it is today.
I mean, early on, especially when a church is brand new, you know, you think you have a vision of here's who we are and here's where we're supposed to be, right? But then there's all these moments that come along. There's a lot of them where people come in and they want to impose whatever they loved about their old church on you, and they want you to become that. Then they'll really love you. So, you know, early on we had a family come, and they were probably 50% of our giving early on. It was definitely in the first, it was probably in the first 6 months, might've been the first year. And the family came and told me, we love this church. We'd really like to make it our church. And they're dropping half our offering every week. Right. But, if you could let our son-in-law preach, every once in a while, and if you could, do more of the Holy Spirit thing, they wanted us to be more, you know, Pentecostal, charismatic kind of thing, this will be our church. And so I had a decision to make, right? The pulpit's not for sale, and neither is the vision. And that's just not what I felt like God was telling us to do. So I said, well, I wish you the best. I hope you find what you're looking for. That was a hard decision for me. That was a hard moment for me. It'd be hard for any leader, but it also helped define here's who we are and here's where we're going. And those moments keep coming. They don't stop coming. As a matter of fact, the more you grow, the more people are attracted to what you're doing. And then they come and they all, often people will come with their own ideas about, man, if you guys would just start doing this, boy, I think the church really, like my last church, they really, you know what I mean? And so, yeah. I'm not moved by that. I used to be. It used to mess with me. Now I'm just like, if this is where God has you, great. If it's not, that's okay. Like we've made it 13 years without you, and I want you to find your right place in the kingdom, because I care about the kingdom. You're a person, but I'm not going to change what we're doing here to accommodate you and make you happy. So, yeah.
What about facilities? Like, and what role have facilities played in your growth?
Yeah, so we started out, we rented the hotel ballroom downtown, for our first Sunday. Then a Nazarene church heard about us. I don't remember how they heard about us. And so they asked if we'd like to rent their fellowship hall. So it probably seated like, I don't know, 60 people with a little stage. And so we started doing that. And the idea was... let's see how this goes. And maybe we could merge our congregations. And like Mosaic was only a week old at that point. Amanased was like 3 months old. And so maybe we could work together. And they were just, they were down to a handful of people. And so we were there for 1 week, and there was a ladies' Bible study that met down the hall in one of the classrooms. And it was two ladies that would meet there to do their Bible study. And they said, it's too loud. You guys are too loud. And so the pastor came to us and said, hey, these two ladies say you're too loud, so you guys have to leave. And it was like, that gives you some insight into why they were the way they were. You know what I mean? Like, anyway, God yeah. bless them.
Yeah.
So we get a phone call from another pastor who heard about us. I don't know how. And he said, we only meet on Tuesday and Friday nights in our church. So do you guys want to come use our church Sunday mornings? Yes. So we were there for a year. Then we rented our own space on the third floor of an office building downtown. I brought in a church consultant to come look at what we were doing after a few years being there and just kind of give us his impression and maybe some ideas about what we could do to get better. And he said, this is the worst location I've ever seen for a church plant. So we had that distinction. You had to rent an elevator to church. It was horrible. But the whole time I was looking for other buildings. I was looking. And I have a file in my computer where I have different buildings we made a move on at some point in the community. And there were 17 different buildings in there. And these are buildings, not that we just drove by. I mean, we toured, we drew a set of plans, we made offers, we tried to make it work. And it just never never would go. And so at this point, Mosaic was about, it was about 120 people, about 80 if the weather was nice, you know what I mean? And during this same time, I was being recruited by a large church about an hour away, and they were recruiting me to be their senior pastor's successor. So they had me on their preaching schedule. It's about 3,000 people on a weekend. And so I would go over there and preach. And, you know, I felt like I could hold a room with 3,000 people, and they kept inviting me back. And then I'd come home to my 80 people, and it really was messing with me. And so I remember asking God, am I being a good steward of my gift, of my preaching gift? Maybe I should be preaching to 3,000 people. But I could not let Greeley go. I just could not. I couldn't leave this community. I just love this city. Feel so called to it. And so I finally started saying out loud, and Pastor, if you're watching me, you're joining me, if you're frustrated, please listen to what I'm saying. So I started saying out loud, I heard Chris Hodges at Church of the Highlands say this, and it just resonated with me. And I started saying it out loud. I started saying, I'm content. Whatever my lot is, if this is my lot, God, I'm content. I'm not going to go try and chase a bigger church. As a matter of fact, I turned them down. And I just said, I'll pastor these 80 people. I'll be the best pastor. I'll dedicate their kids. I'll bury their parents. I'll marry their, I'll be the best pastor. I'm going to preach my heart out to these 80 people, because if Mosaic grows, but it costs me my marriage or one of my kids, or I do something stupid financially or with a woman or something, I don't want it. So I'd rather just stay here and be anonymous and stay on the third floor of this building. And this is fine. I'll work part-time the rest of my life, and I'm going to be the best pastor to these 80 people. When that happened, something broke, and I realized the logjam was me that whole time. I was trying to get Mosaic to grow to validate myself, to legitimize my whatever, right? We all have this little itch we're trying to scratch, and that's what I was trying to do. And I feel like God finally looked at me, and I wasn't trying to manipulate God. I wasn't trying to say, hey, you know, I'm sincere. I meant it. And somewhere in there, I think God looked at me and said, now you're ready. Now I can trust you with more. And yeah, things started happening after that. And Aaron, you know, I mean, you know our story well.
Let me set this up first. I don't know exactly where you're going with our story, but let me just set a little context for people who are watching who don't know. I moved here 12 years ago to Greeley, Colorado, and I was recommended. Somebody said you need to meet Angel Flores, and I met with you. I couldn't have been here a month or two. I don't know, and we met. I don't even know where we met, but instantly we kind of felt like there was this something happening that was bigger than us, and. You know, Angel, you are, as I was thinking about it, this conversation today, Jesus had Peter, James, and John. You know, my wife is, you know, my closest friend. You're in that circle, dude. You're one of my Peter, James, or John. I don't know which one you are, but you're
appreciate
there.
That.
And, but the mankind, the thing that's made our relationship work is that we have really real conversations, and it's been clunky. There's been we've had hard disagreements, like hard talks, like frustration, anger, joy, shared. We've gone through it all, and we're still friends. But there's a part of your story that I want to talk about a little bit in regards to the facility you guys are in, and inadvertently there was pain involved with that. It was like, yay, God. And then, but looking back perspective, it's like, wow, it was really a lot more complicated than I understood. Maybe either one of us understood. And you and I had, I guess I want to get to through this conversation, you and I had a really hard conversation this past summer that for me was transformational. Mm-hmm. And it was really for me a reminder how God, he does amazing things. And he did an amazing thing in our life, in our friendship, in our church's relationship. We are partners. You know, you and I co-founded this network, Connect Leadership Network. And I don't know if we're going to have time to talk about that. This is all happening in the midst of all this. So, but even in the midst of great things happening, God was doing a work that like a cleansing, a purging, a revealing that I wasn't even aware of until this summer. And it was transformational for me because like the whole term white privilege, you know, is something that was a word that, you know, we all became keenly aware of, this summer in light of all the events. And so you and I had a really interesting, hard conversation that was transformational for me. So I just want to set that context because I want to make sure that people understand, like, friendship is hard. Ministry together is hard. It's good. It's hard. But if you walk away from relationships when it gets hard, if you walk away from relationships when somebody sits across the table from you and says, you hurt me in ways you don't even realize you hurt me. I'm grateful for those moments. But I want to set that context for, I don't know where you're going to go, but I think, in our time that's left, I'd like us to touch on kind of this building that
we intersected at, God. For sure. What? Yeah. We intersected at, yeah.
Yeah. So go ahead.
We all, yeah. So we, so when I did that whole I'm content thing, I felt like things started to change. And one of the things that happened, it's a long story. But we were trying to get a different building. There was an old movie theater here in town, and I felt like God had given us this window where we were going to end up. And it was, you know, if you're familiar with Greeley, it's between the Greeley Mall and Home Depot along this street. I felt like we're going to be about a half mile one side or the other of this. And so that's where I was focusing my attention and my search. And we found a movie theater that was in that pocket that was closing. And so we were trying to buy it. Well, that ended up falling through. I had been also pursuing a church building. And so I was approached this church because I had heard that they were closing, that they were suffering, struggling, whatever. They were only down to a handful of people. And so I came in and I wrote them a letter and I said, hey, we've heard that you might be open to the possibility of either selling your building, selling half your building, 25,000 square foot building, sell half your building, maybe lease part of your building, rent it for us, because we were up on the third floor of that building, 1 month to the next, our rent doubled. It went from 3,500 to 7,000 a month because the owner died and his partner took over. And so we knew we had to go. So I've been approaching this and I never would get a response from the pastor. I found out a friend of mine his grandpa was connected to this church. And so he got me the addresses, names and addresses of the elders. And I sent letters to all their homes. And it was just nothing. I could never get anything. And then during that time, you called me and said, hey, that church is closing and they want us to absorb them. And so long story short, we basically worked out between the two of us a five-year lease. And it was one page, basically a handshake document that said, if we can fill the building in 5 years, we'll buy it. And so that was the arrangement. And it was going to be a community center in the meantime. And we were going to kind of collaborate and work together in this. And so right before we moved in, I think I'm going to tell the story that I think you want me to tell. Yeah. Right before we moved in, me, you, and the former pastor were having lunch together. And he tells me, Angel, I owe you an apology. And I was like, for what? Like, I barely know you. Like, what could you possibly have to apologize to me for? And he says, well, when you were sending those letters and trying to contact our board, our elders, about renting the building, buying the building, whatever, they would never let me respond to you because, you know, and they were all predominantly white. And he says, because they didn't want Mexicans owning our building. And I remember I'm sitting there eating and I look around and I looked at you and you were just like stunned, right? And I was too. I mean, I know that stuff happens and I've experienced it in my life, but for a dude to say it to your face, props to him. He didn't have to tell me that. He could have, but so I respect him for telling me that. He's a good man. But still, it was like, and so the evolution of that idea was, if you really look at it big picture, was there was this church in Greeley that wouldn't sell their building to Hispanics. They wouldn't take our money, but they gave it to another white church. And that was the conversation you and I had this summer about, man, we really got, you guys benefited from a racist attitude towards us because we ended up having to buy the building, whereas they gave it away. And so that was the conversation we had. And,
Angel, like, because here's the thing, like that, it was transformational for me because I, if you had asked me on the street 5 minutes before we got together, wherever we met, I would have said, white privilege, like, really? Like, we've never, like, I don't know, I've never experienced that. I don't, like, we all get a fair shake. It's not, does white privilege even exist? And, and you started talking and telling me the story. And then in light of what God had laid in your heart and with perspective, and I went home and told my wife that night, I was like I, that whole thing that there was a whole other side to what God was doing that I missed. And I wish I could go back and do several key things differently, Angel. But I went home and told my wife, I was like, we were like we need to have a conversation about white privilege, like with like in our family and like what that looks like, because I think Angel opened my eyes. God used Angel to open my eyes today that we experienced we experienced white privilege. Like I'm not even thinking of the right language, but you were a victim of white privilege and we benefited from it. And I'd never seen it that way before. And it, for me, it was transformational because in this issue that had been on the news and wherever, social media. Right.
So George Floyd had just happened, Ahmaud Arbery. Yeah.
Yeah. It became very real. And I had to look in the mirror and say, crap, that happened. And then there was fruit from that too, that like, I'm not proud of, like, oh crap, like this decision was made and this decision was made. And, you know, grateful for God's grace, but, that's the thing, like that's in, and if you and I had bailed on our relationship years ago, like we would have missed an opportunity for us to go deeper and us to have you had that hard conversation. And I'm just grateful for you and your grace. One of the things I wanted to talk about today was this, because I feel like it's a hard, awkward conversation, but there are more pastors need to be really thinking about their journey and injustice and just, I don't know. I'm not finding the words right now, but yeah, thank you for your grace. And
the reason it's difficult for people to talk about is because of the implication that what you have or what you've achieved was easier than a person of color achieving the same thing. And that's implied in that whole conversation is that, and so it's challenging, right? It's like, no, I've worked really hard and I would never, no, you have worked hard. And someone who gets a master's degree, who's white, worked really hard to get there. But what if, you know, this is the best metaphor I've ever come across was Miles McPherson talked about this in his book, The Third Option, right-hand bias, where he says the whole world was made for right-handed people. And that's true. Like, right. You swear on a Bible with your right hand, you open doors. They're designed to open with your right hand. Those poor kids who were lefties in school had to sit in those desks and like, you know, twist their arm around. And the world is made for right-handed people. It was made for right-handed people by right-handed people because it made sense for them. And it was easier for them to design everything so that it worked for them. Well, just replace that right-handedness with white. And then we're hopefully, I don't think, trying to make things difficult for people of color. They were just doing things that made sense and setting structures up for their culture that made sense for them. But what that did is it created a block for people of color that they've got to overcome that just to enter into that white culture and understand and assimilate, and then they can start climbing. There's an extra step. And so, but again, when I say that, sometimes people get mad.
Well, because the reality is this, and I want to make sure that people who are watching this understand why this was such a profound moment in our relationship. We got a building for free that Angel and his church wanted to buy. they were not permitted to buy it because they were Mexican. And that is white privilege. That's like, and then there were decisions that we're not talking about that came after that, that were with hand on the heart, trying to do the best thing to honor God. But I look back and think, oh crap. Like that was just fruit from that tree. Like we, like there were several things that happened that was like, oh, that was not okay. Like that was not in, and I, but what, like, so what do you, like, what, Angel, what is it, like, what do you want to say? Like, what is it you, like, is there anything you want to say to the church at large? You want to say to, like, what moving, like, looking, as you look forward in regards to the issue of race and racism and privilege, like, what is it, like, what do you, like, what do you have to say? Like, any thoughts, any wisdom, any perspective? So any?
I would, you know, going back to that idea of the currency of heaven is one soul is worth one soul, right? Whether it's black, white, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. That human being's soul in heaven has the same value no matter what it is, right? So in terms of, so I had a pastor tell me once, he says, I don't know why, but Hispanics love to start church at 2:00. Like they love worshiping in the afternoon. And he was hinting, the kind of underlying joke was they don't want to get up early. That was kind of what he was trying to say. A lot of times, I don't know if it's because I don't have an accent or because I was raised here, or I can articulate my words. Oftentimes people say, Angel, I forget you're Hispanic. And I don't know if I'm supposed to say, you know, thank you or you know what I mean? Like, what do you
do?
Okay. And so I've been in conversations with ministers where they're saying things about even my race that they don't realize are offensive. They're just talking, right? So this guy says, hey man, Hispanics, they don't want to start church till 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Angel, why do you think that is? All right, this guy's asked me. I said, they want to have church at 9 or 10 in the morning too. They just don't have facilities. They don't have the resources. So if you look at the big picture, look at the big picture of our country. If each soul is worth the same, these guys, and I say these guys, I mean Hispanic people of color, whatever, don't have the same access to the same amount of resources that our white brothers have. So we end up putting these guys in 2 and 3 o'clock in the afternoon services because, and then we say, look, we're reaching the Hispanics. Aren't we wonderful? Look what we're doing. We're letting them use our building. We only charge them $1,500 a month. I'm like, man, if you really want to reach Hispanics, buy them a building. Like, I know that sounds too, right? That's too radical. Like, what do you mean we're going to buy them a building? What if we got to heaven and we said, Jesus, I leveraged everything I had to reach as many people as I could. And I knew this guy could reach people if he just had a building. So we bought him a building. Loan him the money to buy him a building. I don't know, whatever. But that's my take on it, is if we're both running this same race and the souls are equally valuable, why do we give them second? Anyway, yeah.
What good and bad from what we've experienced in our friendship over the past 12 years, what are some takeaways for other pastors with in regards to relating with other pastors in the community?
So let's talk about the fact that we're different races. So I read a book by a pastor. His name escapes me right now. He's black. And he said, I had a pastor come to me, pastor in my community. And he said, can I meet with you? So they met and he tells him, I have to repent, because this weekend I was at our denominational gathering and we had a conversation about race. And I realized that I've been in many circles where jokes were made about black people and I laughed at them or I made them. And I realized I've been a part of racism and I've taken part in it. And I just need to ask you for forgiveness. Right. So this guy, this pastor, his name is Casey. Anyway, he says, he asked him, do you like football? And the guy, this pastor's caught off guard. He's like, what? He says, well, do you like football? Because I like football. And how about you come to my house this Saturday? We'll grill some burgers, bring your wife. We'll watch a football game. And the guy says, well, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, you know, and this black pastor said, look, I know you're trying to come in here and cleanse your conscience, and you want me to forgive you for all the racist crap you've done in your life. And he goes, I can't do that. I don't have that power. I don't even know you. But if you want to be friends, let's watch a football game together and we'll go from there. I would say, and he says the guy never called him, never saw him, never heard from him again. I would say part of the secret sauce in our relationship is that I didn't set out to have a white pastor friend. You didn't set out to have a Hispanic pastor friend. We just became friends, and we have more in common than we have different. And we've celebrated each other's differences. We've been to each other's kids' weddings. We've hung out. We've done life. As a result, God has done a lot of incredible things in our community. You know, we packed out the Civic Center for Easter several times. We've done this whole, a lot of good stuff has happened, come out of that. But it starts with, like, do you like football, right? Or you come to my house, watch UFC fights, whatever. Instead of, let's start this cross-racial, you know, that feels awkward. So that's what I would say. Like, just make a friend. You want your church people to do that, right? You want them to walk. Bill Hybels had his famous book, Walk Across the Room. You want them to do that. But pastors somehow feel like we don't have to do that because we're back here in charge. In the Bible, the generals led. They went out first. The kings went out first. That's what we need to do.
Dude, that's brilliant. I hope people really, if you need to pause and rewind and listen to what Angel just said, that's brilliant. Because I was, here's what I saw. Is like, that's the journey you led me on, you know, that I didn't realize I needed to go on. I came here to Greeley. Anyway, just, it's so interesting that early on, if I'm being honest, I'm getting to know Angel. I'm leading, I'm instigating this, da, 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 da. And early on it became like, we started talking about partnership and like ways that we're now, I think it's like it was like we were really dreaming really big back then about things, and some things have actually come to fruition. But if I'm being honest, to your point of how that pastor came into that meeting, it was me coming from a position of, I'm going to give you a hand, you know, hand up. I'm going to lead the friendship. Da, da, da. And it's not like that at all now. And it's been hard. It's been, you know, we've had hard conversations to get to this point, but what you just said was brilliant. Like, don't come into a meeting and say, let's do reconciliation. Let's have a church service together. Like, come to my house and watch football, or have me come to your house and watch football. Right. And this is friends first. And thank you for that, man. Hmm. Hey, a couple things before we wrap up. So dude, one of the things I respect about you, Angel, is you're well-read, you're well-studied. One of the most transformational conferences I ever went to was a conference you told me about for like 5 years. I made fun of it until I actually went. And now we go every year. You're always kind of out ahead. I think like you're one of my friends that is always out ahead, and I'm thinking I need to ask what Angel thinks about this. As you look towards like what's next for the church, like what do you see in the horizon for the church?
That is a good, if you would have asked me that in February, I would have had a pretty solid, articulate answer. But COVID has shaken the tree in a lot of ways. And I've seen, and I'm sure lots of pastors have seen, that the metrics that we used to use to determine how committed someone was don't count anymore. And so I think the future, the short-term future, is we're redefining what it means to be a committed Christian. What does it mean to be committed to a church? I think online is definitely going to play a bigger part in the future. I don't see online becoming the church. I just don't. I think you know, Hebrews still applies, right? We've still got to gather. There's something that happens when you gather as opposed to when you gather virtually on your couch. And I know we had to do that for a while. Some guys are still doing that. I've got friends who are still doing that right now. That's all they can do. So that's what they're doing. And that's what we did for 15 weeks. But I think we still got to gather. So I think the online thing is going to be even bigger. Mm-hmm. But there's no replacement for the local church. I saw a meme this morning that said, you know, Stephen Furtick's not going to preach your funeral. Joel Osteen is not going to marry your kids. You know, and they started naming all these big guys, right? T.D. Jakes is not going to show up and deliver groceries if you guys are hurting. Nothing against those guys. They're all great guys. They're all heroes of mine. But there's nothing can replace the local church in that relationship. So I think, yeah, online is going to play a bigger part. I think we're going to be, everybody is better at online now than they ever were, right? Every church has some kind of online presence now, which is good. But I still think we've got to figure out a way to get back to being that community, that this is my church and these are my people. Yeah, that's what I think, but who knows? Everything's still in flux. Everything, you know, we don't have a vaccine or right now, October 12th. So October 12th, 2020, we still don't know what's going on. We don't know who's going to win the election. We don't know. And who knows?
So what would you say? One of the things that I appreciate about you is you speak truth and love, and you have such a heart for men and women in ministry. So, like, what would you say to the men and women in ministry or in leadership who are wanting to quit right now, who are just feeling so discouraged?
I would say you're not alone. Everybody feels like this right now. Everybody feels discouraged right now because the metrics we were using to determine how successful we were have all got messed up. And so what I did personally, and I would encourage those who are listening to do, is I drew a line of delineation between pre and post COVID. So pre-COVID, our church, we got up to about almost 700 a week. You know, and you start putting all those markers, right? Our offering was this, and our people involved in small groups and kids church, and we're serving in the community and mission trips and whatever it is that you keep score with. But that world doesn't exist anymore. At least it doesn't right now. So you've got to give yourself permission to say, okay, that's over. Now here's what we have. We're starting all over. And let's see what we can do in this environment. That's what we did in that environment, but that environment is no longer real. Now we're in this new environment. And, you know, personally for us, we have we've removed every other row of chairs. We've got everybody wearing masks in church. Yesterday we had three services. But again, our capacity is basically cut in half. And so what could we do in this environment? How can we get more people to join us online and engage online? What does that look like? Someday I think that our old world is going to come back. But if you know, let's say an effective vaccine is released in March, and then we all just go back to doing what we were doing, we are idiots. We've got to take the lessons we've learned and both end. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would take that pressure off of yourself. Everybody feels like quitting. Everybody quit at least mentally a few times during COVID. It sucked. Like it was awful. And yeah, you're not the only one feeling that, but give yourself some grace. Like I've taken all the pressure of how can we grow? Like, man, forget growing. We're trying to survive right now. Yeah. This is a 1-year event in my mind. So we're going to just try and survive and try and get to next March or April or whatever intact. And then let's talk about regrouping and going. Some guy, you know, you see people who are saying, we're reaching thousands now online. Are you though? You know, I don't know how much to believe of all those metrics. So give yourself some grace.
So what's bringing joy to your journey right now?
You asked me that before we started, so I thought I could prepare and have a good answer. I'm having, are you talking about in church or just
anyway, in my life, family? Mm-hmm. Whatever. Jiu-jitsu.
Jiu-jitsu. Yeah. I learned at Omoplata. I feel like the whole restructuring that COVID forced us all to do has taken off some of the superficial stuff that I didn't really need to be doing anyway and gotten rid of it. And so I'm more conscious of what goes on my calendar and what doesn't, what I'm getting involved with. And, you know, there's things that are coming back to life now that I don't need to be a part of. And so I feel less pressure. I feel more peace because there's less things happening right now. And I have a tendency to overdo. I have a tendency to overengage. So that I feel more when I wake up in the morning, I don't feel like, okay, let's go. I feel more like, let me have some coffee and spend some time with my wife. Now let's go. And so I do feel lots of peace in that. Got to spend a lot of time around my grandboys, my grandbabies, and my kids. And we're going to a pumpkin patch this afternoon. That brings me joy.
Cool.
Yeah. I used to think if a bunch of people knew my name, or if I got invited to speak at the right places or whatever. And I guarantee there's pastors that are on this, that are listening to us right now. That's still your thing, right? You're still thinking, man, if so-and-so would only notice me, if I would only get invited to whatever, I promise you, if that happens, Aaron and I have both been there, been on big stages, whatever. I promise you, it's not going to scratch it. Be content. Start saying it out loud. I'm content. I'm content right here and right now. If you can't say it now, you'll never say it. And so it doesn't matter if your church doubled, you'd have double the problems. You'd have double the wackos that show up. If you have one weirdo that shows up, I have five, Aaron has 10. That's not going to fix it. So be content.
Yeah. Dude. Oh, I love you, man. That was such wisdom. And thank you for you're such a good man. Thank you for being a leader and for your friendship and for partnership in ministry. And I'm excited I get to serve with you in this community for the indefinite future. I'm excited about that, but I'm excited that you get a chance to speak to some people today. And I know God used you to speak to some specific needs. And so thank you. Thanks for being a part of this conversation. All right, man.
Yes. The last thing I would say, if you're a pastor and you don't have a tribe, you don't have a friend, just start inviting. You need to reach out. Because Aaron seems to think that he reached out to me first, but I'm pretty sure I reached out to him first. Either way, I'm pretty sure I paid for lunch. But either way, you want a friend, you got to be a friend. And Aaron and I started our own pastors network. If you don't have a tribe, join Connect Pastors Network. You're welcome to be a part of what we're doing. But you got to have, let me share this one last thought, Aaron, and then I'm done. So if a building gets struck by lightning, a high-rise building, right? Think Manhattan, gets struck by lightning. That lightning is going to try and find its way to the ground. It's got to ground itself. That's what it's trying to do. So as it moves through the building, it's going to do all kinds of damage. I heard this from Wayne Cordero years ago. It's going to create all kinds of chaos. It's going to start fires. It's going to destroy computers. It's going to wreck the building. But if there's a lightning rod at the top of the building, when the lightning strikes it, it has a big cable that it'll guide that lightning down to the ground, dissipate it, and there's no damage, right? So every one of us needs a lightning rod friend that you can call and say, hey, I've got something going on. It's messing with me. It's messing in my heart. I've got to process this, that you can just share it with them. And once that happens, that the power that negative energy had on you, the enemy, could be your own insecurities, whatever, is gone. It dissipates. I've experienced that over and over and over. Every pastor needs that kind of lightning rod friend. It can't always be your wife, man. She's tired of hearing, or your husband. He's tired of hearing. You need somebody that you can just call and say, hey, man, I need a lightning rod real quick. And then it's gone. And so that's part of what the Connect Network has been for many guys, is that lightning rod friend. I got to talk to you about something. I got to confess something. I've got to whatever. Boom, it's gone. Okay, the power's over. So,
yeah. Dude, that's probably a whole nother conversation. Let people know what God did through us to create the Connect Leadership Network, because it's been one of the most meaningful things that you and I, outside of our ministries, have been a part of.
Yeah, I agree.
And so anyway, dude, love you, grateful for you, and blessings on you in your ministry, and enjoy the pumpkin patch this afternoon, all right?
Right on, bud. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
All right, bye.